Welcome, everybody, to the Merrill Hodge Find a Way podcast. We've had a lot of podcasts, and it's really just been Dr. Cummings and I, Castellani in our last one, Rudy Castellani, who is, a huge contributor to our last podcast. And this one actually might be just as special, maybe even more special, because I think we're going to touch in a few areas that I think are extremely important, but I think it's important that people hear from, you know, a wife's perspective, a mom's perspective, a mom from kids that play sports, contact sport, a wife of a former NFL player, and somebody that I've gotten to know over the years, and I just have enormous respect for. Just putting the title mom on there, that always gets you the best title you can have in the world, but she's an outstanding mom. Going to join us is Katie Detmer. Ex-wife of former player Coy Detmer. Coy Detmer Jr. actually and my son played together at BYU, and just a fabulous kid, fabulous football player, and love their family, love what they brought to the game, and the Detmer name is going to ring the bell of a lot of people. And Ty and Coy, obviously outstanding quarterbacks, both played in the National Football League for a long period of time. And we're going to bring Katie on, and we're going to really talk about really get a perspective of the narrative and what it has done to relationship, her perspective on what it has done. What I have seen more and more and more is the excuse it's given people. Now, for people who have maybe not listened to any of these podcasts, and then I'll bring Katie on. Every neuropathologist I have talked to, including the one sitting to my right now, across this country into Canada, every time I ask them, like, well, tell me what CTE is. Just, I mean, give it to me. I mean, I've seen the headlines where it says, you know, it's linked to football. It's football causes it. Every one of them go, Merrill. Okay, that's what the media says. They'd have me papers, and they say, why don't you read this paper? A science paper. I start reading that science paper, and there's all kinds of language in there. The ones that's the language I love the best is when they say, we don't know. Okay, they constantly say, we don't know. And I'm like, why don't you just stop there? How does it get to the media to this degree? But they say, listen, Merrill, it's a pattern, okay, in an observation state. We don't know what causes it, and we don't know what it causes. And I'm like, okay, well, and we have all these cases where they never played football, never played sports. And, you know, that was obviously one of the crutches to writing the book, is when you understood that the science, the truth of everything, they don't know. But now in the media, it's driven as fact. People talk about it like it's as common as the common day cold. It's really affected human lives. And there's a litany of issues with it, but the excuse portion of it is disturbing, because everybody's behavior, everything they do, if they have any problems, oh, I play football, I want to have CTE. Now keep in mind, you can't diagnose this in a living person. And just because you have the pattern does not mean you have any cognitive issues too, by the way, okay? They don't even know what symptoms they are, which would be another podcast with how they've told you how you can help avoid getting it. Now, I mean, that's a whole nother podcast. So that being said, Katie, welcome to the show, and thank you for taking some time with us to share a lot of great insight. I've talked to you many times, but we sure appreciate you joining us.
Well, thank you, Merrill, and I really appreciate that wonderful introduction. And I thought your book was amazing, by the way. It was awesome, and it was long overdue. And I was super excited when my son, Coy, said, you know, you need to read Merrill's book, because we had a conversation about this just a month ago. And we've had many conversations. So I read the book, and I read it quickly because it was really good. So, thank you.
Well, you know what, Katie, let me just applaud you, because most people we've had in our media tour, think about this, in the media, okay, journalists, they've wanted to do interviews on the book, they've wanted to talk about the book, and the first question we ask them, would you read the book, and their response is no. And I'm like, okay, that's why we got a big problem, because the irresponsibility in the journalistic, not all the media, but a vast majority of it, like that. Everybody who's read the book, it's been a really good conversation. And people misunderstand this book. I'm not about to change your mind. That's not my goal. My goal is to open up your mind and give you all the facts. You do it with what you want to do. But wouldn't it be nice to have all the facts? So I appreciate you saying that. And I don't want to really take a lot of time. I want this to be your stage, because you have just fascinating experiences. And I think that's the biggest thing, is you've lived a lot of things that I think will be insightful to a lot of moms, a lot of wives, and a lot of women, and I mean even men, and everybody who listens to this, I think will be intrigued by it. And referring to Coy, now that's your son. I mean, so he is a fabulous. We miss him at BYU. I know Bo misses him. So you can tell Coy that we appreciate him challenging you to read the book or giving you a heads up on it. And then you reading it will help get the narrative straight and give people the right information. So one of the things I wanted to kind of set the table with you is that, and I don't even know where you start with this, but we've talked many times now, everybody wants to blame, well, I played football, I had a concussion, and now I have CT, so that's why I drink. That's why I do drugs. That's why my marriage is falling apart, or that's why I'm struggling in business. You know, they have all these excuses now, and as soon as people say that, they actually believe it. So I don't know how that really sets you up other than that gives you a big ballpark to start with. So I'd like your perspective, maybe as a wife. I'm a former NFL wife, but I think you stay in contact with a lot of wives and you see some of the hysteria that has taken place in their own lives and how they handle it and the effects it's having on their lives.
Yeah, that's a good, I'm glad that you're bringing this up. So this has bothered me since back in 2010 when the hysteria started, and Coy had just retired and we were going through, you know, our own divorce and everything. And so the headlines were constantly, everything was CTE, everything was CTE, and, you know, your kids are going to get it, and, you know, your spouses are going to commit suicide. I mean, it really got alarming, I thought, at how irresponsible they were about, you know, oh, they're going to commit suicide. Oh, if they played. And it really bothered me because I knew what happened and what happens when guys have to retire. And you know it too, Meryl, because you lived through it. It's very difficult. And immediately people say, oh, because you didn't save your money. No, we did save our money. Oh, you didn't do this. Well, now it's CTE. And the truth of the matter is the NFL is it's an amazing, you know, opportunity, and it's once in a lifetime, this and that, but it's an emotional thing to walk away from. So just from the emotional component, and there are a lot of contributing factors, and you see it when you're in that world. People drinking, people, you know, maybe they've got injuries, so they have pain pills they have to take, or they have always had kind of a troubling marriage. Well, then when the game is over, all those things, oh my goodness, you know, the headline said that if they're screaming all the time or they're drinking all the time, then it's CTE. And the truth of the matter that I started to notice, and I've been following this since the very beginning, since 2010, 2011, and I followed it really closely when they started saying child abuse and all these other things that really bothered me. It bothered me because nobody was talking about the contributing factors that some of these people already had in their lives, whether it was alcohol or, you know, drugs or pills or always had a volatile marriage. They never talked about that. And it really bothered me because I feel like some of these people could get some help maybe. Maybe they are depressed because they left football. It's a very emotional thing, and it has nothing to do with not having your money in the bank or, oh, the bright lights aren't on anymore. I remembered Sean Landetta's wife told me, you know, Sean would talk about the two deaths. You know, you die your football death, and then you die your real death. And there's so much truth to that. And when you live through that as a spouse, and you see one career end, and you see the emotion involved, it's really sad. It's really sad. And it affects everything. And so when all the CTE stuff started, it really bothered me that nobody was talking about the other contributing factors.
Well, you know,
depression,
what?
Depression, you know, that kind of thing.
Yeah, well, Katie, all of those footers are terrific. I'm going to take them one at a time. The actual part of retirement, okay, which you are so spot on. But what I think people really don't get, I try to help them understand it when they ask me, like, you know, about retirement. Is that hard really transitioning into the, you know, to your life's work? I go, now listen, if you play nearly a decade in the NFL, that's not when you started football. I started playing when I was eight, okay? So by the time I get done, I got 22 years of doing the same thing over and over and over that I loved. Now I ask them, I go, okay, now just think of something that you love. You've been doing for a long time. And I tell you, you can't do it anymore. Let me add this. And that you loved was your livelihood. And now you got to find another sense of livelihood. You've got to change, you know, you got to create your life's work. You've got to go down a different path. You got to rebuild. I go, that is astronomical to a lot of people. I know the way my career ended, because it was in the middle of the season, it was actually more brutal, because now every day, I mean, you talk about depression. I never thought I was going to get off a couch when my career ended.
Yeah.
I was just grateful. And to your point, the one thing the NFL does, I've been a part of these rookie symposiums. The resources and information and the access these players have. I mean, if you walk out of there and you're not prepared for life's work, okay, that is on you. Okay, this is not anybody else, but it is on you. But let's just take that one for the second and just kind of share with us, you know, what you guys went through, because changing a lifestyle, finding something else that you love, transitioning into something else and finding a different way to provide, I mean, that is challenging and it can be overwhelming. And you hit another point, you know a bunch of players, couples, okay, they were drinking when they were playing. They had a rocky relationship when they were playing. But as CT's not then, but as soon as they retire, it's CT. Oh, it's because you had a concussion. That's why you got a problem. But this existed when their career was taking place.
Yeah.
And now they're making excuses for it. So why don't you just start with the transitional aspect of just how tough that was for all of you guys in transitioning to a different lifestyle.
That's a really good point, and I'm glad that you're bringing that up. Actually, Coy was drafted in 97, and that was the first rookie symposium. And I was like, wow, they're doing some great things. And over just the 10 years, everything got better and better and better. I mean, they would have guys come in and do role-playing for, you know, a bad state or whatever, or like bad financial guy. I mean, it was really cool. I feel like the NFL does a lot of things right, and they do offer a lot of resources. So what was troubling to me is that we saved all our money. I mean, we lived way below our means because our goal was not to have that dramatic lifestyle change. But guess what? Even living a basic lifestyle, having enough money to live a totally different lifestyle, it's the emotion. It's like tearing something away that you've done since you were 6 or 7 or 8. And that is an emotional component. It doesn't matter if you've had a concussion or if you played what position you played. It can happen to a kicker, a quarterback. And that was really troubling to me because Coy's goal was always to coach high school football. And he's coaching high school football now, and he's very good at it. And he could coach other levels. He's had other offers. But he loves giving back to the high school where he grew up. I mean, he played at Mission down in the valley on the border. He's doing an incredible job. He's a great coach.
Awesome.
But let's take that gray area when you're retiring. And the whole plan was to save all this money so that coaching high school football wouldn't be a financial burden. Because, you know, you don't make a lot of money coaching high school football.
Right.
You'd make a lot more doing something else. You could coach somewhere else. But that was the goal. Well, then there's this gray area where you're getting ready to retire, and maybe I should do this, and maybe I should look into this. So you go off course, not because of anything other than you did something that gave you this incredible high. I mean, playing on a Monday night, guys you're not going to bed until 7 the next morning. You know that, Merrill. And there's nothing you can do about it. You're in front of 85,000 people with lights on, and whether it's Sunday afternoon or Thursday night or whatever. It's very intoxicating, and there's no alcohol or anything involved. It's just the game. And I mean, just even as a spouse, you feel the intoxication after a big win. It's very emotional. So take all that away, and it could be taken away gradually because maybe you kick around to a few teams, or like in your situation, it's abrupt. That's really emotionally challenging to anyone. I don't care what profession you're in. I mean, you're not going to take a lawyer at 35. Now, lawyers aren't being lawyers when they're 5 years old, but or a doctor, like Dr. Cummings, you're not going to be like, oh, at 35, you can never do this again. You've got to start some other career.
Right.
That's challenging. Well, now you're dealing with something you've done since 5, 6, or 7, you know, and I don't care what it is or what position you played, there's just this emotional component. And so you go through that, and we weren't big partiers or anything like that, but we had to go through that together. And it hurt our marriage, and that's another conversation. But, you know, I didn't blame football, but it's just this emotional component. And everybody deals with it differently. Some people, you know, the marriage survived. To Coy's credit, I mean, we got through it. We're in different situations. You know, we're not married anymore, but he's doing an incredible job coaching football. So I'm going to bring something up that stuck in my head that an attorney told me in 2010 when all the CTE stuff started. And we saved enough money so that maybe Coy wouldn't have to work for a few years while he looked for a job. Like, we planned way ahead. Well, next thing you know, the guys have nothing to do with their time, right? That's a problem.
Mm-hmm.
And now they're at home, and they're trying to, oh, I went to the gym today, but that's a huge problem. Because as a mom, I'm still running kids to soccer and running kids to baseball, and my life hasn't changed. My life is still crazy as ever. But now all of a sudden you've got someone that was working 7 days a week in a very – people don't understand. It's not just Sundays. It's once training camp starts, it's every day, and then you've got OTAs and all that. It's very intense. And so now he's got nothing to do, or they have nothing to do. So this attorney told me, you know, what Tom Landry said, the three keys to life. Always have someone to love, whether it's your child, your spouse, you know, always have something to look forward to, a trip, you know, something to get you through the day or your job, and always have something to do with your time. And I think a lot of players, they get to that point, all of a sudden they don't know what to do with their time, even though they planned it. Because everything ended not the way they expected, or they didn't know that it was going to feel that empty. Even though you planned for it, you don't know that it's going to feel that empty, you know, when the game is over.
Well, you know what? You cannot be more spot on. And listening to you from your eyes, you know, how that can – I mean, I just think a lot of couples can probably really relate with what's going on here, especially moms and wives, you know. I've always believed this too, Katie, that I don't care who you are, you have to have a purpose. You have to have a purpose in this life. There's got to be something. Now, listen, your purpose may be different than my purpose, but if you don't have one, that's going to be a problem. And when you get the purpose ripped from you, that becomes a huge hurdle. And that's why, you know, what the league does now, to your point, I didn't realize that was his first year. Was part of the rookie symposium. See, I was a part of the rookie symposiums when it first started. And one of my
97.
My panel was responsible. I would have a panel of rookies, a panel of players that were rookies last year. So they were sitting in the seats Coy would have been sitting in, or they've just experienced a year of football. And they got to share with what they thought about their what they were thinking when they came into the NFL versus the reality of it, okay, from – I'm trying to think of the linebacker. This wasn't the exact day. This wasn't the exact panel, but it happened in one of the panels. His name is Kendrell Bell. He was drafted by the Pittsburgh Steelers. He was one of the biggest.
I remember him.
One of the most, ferocious hitters I've ever seen in football. He was sitting on the panel with me. And what we were trying to do is we were helping the guys understand really about money, all the people that are going to cling on to you, how to handle tickets, how to handle your money. It's a job now, you know, the responsibilities that come with it. Just a whole host of really insightful things where, hey, they were thinking one thing, but now they've experienced it. They were like, hey, let me help you with this. So Kendrell Bell, he was like, hey, listen, all that money you think you're getting, he goes, I'll tell you a story. Got a $500,000 signing bonus. This is a true story. He said, I get the check in the mail. It's for like $257,000, something like that. He's like,
Oh, yeah.
He's like, whoa, wait a minute. He's telling the story of the rookies. He's like, I call up the Steelers. I said, hey, I signed for $500,000. He goes, when's the rest coming? And they said, he goes, I'd never seen that FICA thing and all this other stuff. He goes, I'd never heard about taxes. He said, I didn't know about taxes. He goes, literally half was gone. I go, my agent I owed some money to. So he goes, whatever that money is that you think that big dollar is, he goes, you can cut that in half. And it was just like you could just see. And this actually happened. Kid raises his hand.
I believe it.
Kid raises his hand, okay, from the audience. Because I was running the panel, and I was like, listen, questions are going to come up during it. Don't wait, because then maybe we miss a good question. Well, he was actually a wide receiver. I'm forgetting his name right now. He was drafted by the Dallas Cowboys, but he was out of Pitt. And the Steelers had not drafted him this year. He just stands up, and he's like, hey, yo, you're not going to tell me how I'm going to spend my money. He goes, I didn't come here. He goes, Dallas Cowboys can't tell me how to spend it. The NFL can't tell me how to spend it. And Kendrell Bell, now you could have cut tension with a knife now. And I'm like, okay, wait a minute. We're just about to get into a brawl here. And I was like, hey, listen, he's not telling you how to spend it. He's just telling you what happened to him. And he just kept going off. And Kendrell stood up and goes, hey, listen, you sit down or I'm going to come down there and sit you down. And I was like, oh my. But what resonated with me at that point was, here's a form of a player just a year removed from where he's sitting, helping him just say, I'm giving you the reality, okay? This kid don't nothing to hear. He wanted nothing to do with the information that he was getting, okay? Kendrell Bell said, hey, listen, basically what I'm telling you, whatever you think you're getting, just plan on getting half of that, okay? And if you think you're going to take care of your boys, you better make a lot of money, because those boys are going to be taking everything from you. And that's what was his message to him. Well, that player, he didn't want to hear it. He was getting mad at Kendrell Bell for acting like that. So he's getting good information, and we're going to get in a fist fight here at this symposium. I'm almost like, it goes to show you can give people the information, you can help them, you can give them resources. It doesn't mean they're going to accept it. It doesn't mean they're going to do it. So that's what you can just hope for, is that you give them, and they use it and they apply it, because nobody can make them do it. But it really resonated with me that, even though I've lived it and known it, I was just like, wow. I mean, that was a real life example there. But going back to your point of when you transition, you're going to, well, Coy's got, what, a good another 30 years of work in his life. I mean, you know, he's got to create something. And until he creates that, that's going to really wear on the both of you like it did.
Hey, well, the other thing, too, is can you find something that's going to give you that type of satisfaction? And you and I both know, I mean, you were blessed with the opportunity to be on ESPN. And Troy Aikman gets a great gig, and Steve Young gets a great gig. But you and I both know, one in 20, like Andy Reid gives a speech every year. One in 20 million guys get to be at training camp. One in 20, it's a really crazy number. Well, then that number, it's like, of that number, it's like, 1 in 10 million get to be on ESPN. You know what I mean? It's so small of the people that get to. So what's funny, it's not really funny, but everybody's like, oh, well, you know, my husband wants to be like announcing on ESPN. And in the back of your head, you're like, that's awesome. But man, like, it's such a small percentage of the guys that are even playing. And then the guys that get to play, that's like a 1 in 20 million. So it's tough to find something that matches it emotionally. And what's really good for Coy is that he's an awesome coach, and he, you know, wanted to be back coaching high school. I think eventually, I mean, he's had opportunities, like I said, to go on other levels. This fits his life right now, and that's great. I know with Doug Peterson, he coached high school. You know, he went through his transition. Those are awesome people. But then he calls Andy Reid one day, and he's like, you know what, I'm ready to take that next step. Quarterback coach for Andy Reid. Now we know where Doug Peterson is. But my point is, you could have all the money saved in the world. You know, we did. I know other people have. But if you don't have that next step that gives you that purpose, people will say, oh, I bet you didn't save your money. No, we actually did. We planned for all these obstacles. That's what was troubling for me. We planned. We went to Bible study. I'll never forget, Merrill, the first Bible study I went to. Tommy Vinson did the best Bible studies ever, Tori Vinson's wife. I love the girl. But you go to these Bible studies and they say, okay, 85% of every NFL player is going to end up divorced. Everyone looks around the room and says, oh, it's not going to be me. Oh, it's not going to be me. And you sit there. And then when it happens, you sit there and you say, but I don't get it. We tried everything. We did everything. You know, you try to have all those things set up. And sometimes it's an emotional component that's out of your hands. You know, it's just this emotional component. And that's something that really resonated with me, getting back to CTE, these doctors that didn't know, you know, what is it, Ann McKee or whatever, that doesn't know anything about football. She doesn't know anything about the life. Or how about the guy from that movie Concussion, which I refuse to watch, but he says, oh, if you have your kids play football, your child abuse. And I'm thinking, do you know anything about really what's happening in the NFL, like how somebody gets to that emotional point, and now you're going to pin it on one thing called CTE. I think that was just so irresponsible, and that's why I've been following this so closely, because I felt like it was really awful to do to football. And then now I've got my kids playing, and I feel like I try to be a good mother, and you're saying it's child abuse. Oh, it really bothered me.
Yeah.
It really bothered me.
You know, that was Dr. Amalu, and I think it was one of the most disgusting things anybody's ever said.
Yeah.
To attack a parent that loves their kid without end, which obviously you do, and millions of people do, if they're going to allow them to play contact sports, and you have, Dr. Amalu, not one shred of scientific evidence that playing contact sports is ever going to affect our kids later in life, is,
yeah.
It's ridiculous to do that. It's disrespectful to parents who love their kids. And you are exactly right. He has absolutely zero conceptual understanding, first of all, obviously, of parenting, which that disturbed me more about parenting than it disturbed me about anything, quite honestly. For him to say anything about a parent in that manner, in that grotesque manner, it pretty much sums up who he really is.
Well, that was exactly the thing that got me speaking publicly about this. You know, I was living my life and doing my thing and letting my kid play football and making sure I was comfortable with it and that he was in a good environment. But when people started throwing that around, that was child abuse and I was involved in the sport,
yeah,
and I saw what was going on, then I thought, you know what, you're not going to tell me I'm abusing my child. You're not going to tell me that these lovely families that I'm dealing with, I'm taking care of their kids, and I love those kids as much as I love my kid, and I'm not abusing any of these people. And that leads, you know, something we talked about, Katie, too, might lead us into the idea of the stigma of football parents. Because I know, I haven't had it happen directly to me, but there's been a couple of times where my wife has been in situations, and they've found out that my son plays tackle football, and they've turned immediately around and walked off on my wife. You know,
that's
people
horrible.
have said horrible things about her parenting because she lets her kid play football. And I, you know, with your experience coming from the NFL and now your kids play, I mean, what kind of experience have you had with that or heard about that? Have you encountered anything like that?
I have, and I mean, I can be pretty strongly opinionated, but I always tell people, that, you know, living through a situation, I mean, that supersedes any opinion. So it's like, you know, what I've lived through and what I'm aware of. So I have had it happen. In fact, even recently, I mean, I read the book quickly and I passed it out on Facebook, and I've had some local moms that their kids play basketball, and I shared this with Meryl, and they got real rude and they were attacking me like, yeah, hit your head against blah, blah, blah. And I thought to myself, you know, and my kids have gone through it too, so I've talked about it with my kids. I've even had people treat me really kind of rude, like I'm ignorant, just mm-hmm. because they think the NFL is ignorant. They think football is full of ignorant people. They really do. And it's really troubling. And my kids are a little bit older right now, Peter, how am I trying to say this? So when this all broke, Cole was just starting, my youngest was just starting to play tackle football. So I'd have a few people. And also, you got to remember, I'm in Texas.
Mm-hmm.
It's a little bit different
right
down here. I mean, people down here, now I want you to speak at the, and my son Coy brought this up. He said, Mom, Meryl needs to go speak at the high school football coaches. They have a big, like a convention type thing the week before high school football starts. It's huge. Every coach in Texas goes. So I'll tell you, I'm in Texas, but I am from Massachusetts. And people up there, when I go home, get funny about it, okay? And in fact, when I introduced the book on Facebook, and I actually mailed it to a few family friends, I, you know, bought it for them, they got funny about it. And I got upset back. So I've heard of worse stories, but I'm in Texas right now, so there are some people, but I will say in Texas, those people get probably attacked back more because, you know, people down here, that's why I'm excited. I've had coaches, like I'm talking coaches' wives that are in their 60s that ordered the book as soon as I put it on Facebook, because I know a lot of coaches' wives because of Sonny. Sonny just finished his 50th year coaching high school football, and they order the book because they're mad that the media is turning, the media wants to kill football.
Yeah.
You know, and so these people down here, so we do have a little bit of a different, but my son Coy started playing tackle football at 5 because in New Jersey, we lived in Texas in the spring and we came back up here and he said, Mom, I don't want to play soccer. I want to do this football thing. Well, they didn't have flag football back then. And I'll be honest with you, and I tell people this story all the time, least of my worries. It was like bumper cars. They're bouncing. The pads are giant. The helmet's giant. You know, and I will tell you, most of the injuries every single year, and I got on my kids every single year, messing around before practice. Someone would end up with a broken collarbone or a broken arm, and then messing around after practice. And I'd get on my Coy. I'd say, you know what? Stop it. Don't be doing that. Because you know what? Those kids are out for the season because they were messing around without anything on. And the next thing, they got a broken collarbone. It's happened every single year.
It happens every single night at our practices. I'm packing up equipment. I'm like, guys, stop. Stop. Get off each other. Someone's going to get hurt. It's rougher than the practice.
So Cole, it's true. And then so Cole comes along and I start in on him. Cole, stop messing around. Oh, Mom, you're embarrassing me. I said, Cole, ask your brother. Every year, someone's, you know, collarbone, and guess what? About a week later, someone shows up at the junior high with a sling. I'm like, oh my gosh, what happened? Oh, they were at, you know, playing catch out in the, you know, field, and they got hit without anything on, you know, and then next thing you know, they have a broken collarbone.
Katie, that's exactly why I put that story in the book, is because it was a true story. I mean, I 2 days in a row, we practiced on Tuesday. I've taken a roll, I'm missing one of my kids, broke his ankle. Then the Thursday, I'm taking a roll, got another kid missing. Again, got hurt at recess. Both of them get hurt at recess. So I just jokingly said, guys, stop going to recess. Just get lunch and go back to your room, because we're not going to have enough people to finish the game of football if we keep this up. But something that you hit, that this shaming stuff, this extremely uninformed approach. And anybody, because I just had a radio show the other day, as they introduced me, they were talking about, you know, because you wrote this book, you know, you're considered a denier. And then when he was leading into it, I started thinking about it. And I'm like, you know what? The deniers, quite honestly, are those people who have never read nor will read the scientific papers. The deniers are actually the people who have bought into anything they've seen in the media. And I'll use these two words all the time. People go, oh, well, it causes, or it links, or there's a link. Okay. The next time you hear that, and anybody that's listening to this, next time anybody says that, go, okay, let's just have a good, balanced conversation, and here's how we do it. We're going back to ground zero. You, who've just looked at me or accused me of allowing my kids to play contact sports and I'm supposedly now a bad parent in your eyes, why don't you bring the scientific paper that says there's going to be a cause or a link down the road? Do some research and go read some scientific literature and prove that I'm wrong then. And I've told this to many people. If you want to give me the scientific literature, if you want to disagree with what I'm saying, and you really want to show it to me, bring it to me. You can get to the website, brainwashedbook.com. You can send it to us. You can bring it to us. But the problem is, first of all, most people won't go do that. And if they do it, and they do their due diligence, they get a different experience. They get a different understanding of what's going on. And that's actually happened to us in an interview from a media perspective, Katie. I mean, a guy was going to send us scientific literature that said concussions cause CT, football causes CT. He was so convinced on that. And so we basically said, okay, send us the papers, and we had to send him some stuff. The next day he emails us, Peter, Dr. Cummings can verify this. To his credit, he sent back an email, I'm sorry, I'm wrong. Now, here's what was disturbing about it. So for a decade, that guy has been writing stuff in the media that same language. So people who have been reading his garbage have been buying into everything that he's been saying, and he's not done 1 ounce of due diligence by reading the science paper. He has taken some headline or listened to somebody and then decided to put an article together himself. If you ask people, hey, listen, bring me the scientific literature, show me the science that says that you're right and that this is going to be a problem later in life, because just so you know, there is none. and that subconcussive thing that nobody can measure, and the great neuropathologists with great integrity, if you ask them what a subconcussion is, they'll be like, I don't know. It's not scientific. No way to measure it. There's no literature.
Well, I love, that's why I got so into your book and I read it so quickly, was because we haven't heard any good science, no scientific evidence. All we've heard is these alarming headlines. So I read everything. I read everything Dr. Cummings said. I've been following your podcast. And what I thought was interesting is that everybody's reading these alarming headlines, but then when I mailed your book to at least 10 people, and they didn't even open the book, and then they start in, oh, this and that. And I said, read the book, because these are, you know, top neuropathologists. These are top scientists. This is real evidence that what's being said and what's being thrown out there is incorrect, and it's really bad. My mother-in-law, she's 73, I think. I don't know. I don't want to. She's awesome. You know, Sunny just coached 50 years, so she still hollers at refs. I mean, she's the best. Sweetest woman in the whole wide world. And she says to me, I sent her the book. I said, I just sent you the book, Betty, and you and Sunny, I know she'll read it. She said, I don't understand. She brought up a great point. Why these reporters and all these people on these, you know, TV and radio shows want to bash football? Because when football goes away, they're not going to have a job. They're not going to have a job. I said, that's a good point. She said, I mean, they're just trashing our sport, you know, because she's awesome. But it's a really good point. It's like they all want to sit there and say all these ugly things about football. Well, I mean, my son's going to coach. You know, next year he graduates, and my boys play. And, I mean, why do these people want football to go away? Because the way they're talking, that's what they're doing.
Yeah, it's like cut your nose off to spite your face. I mean, there's a lot of that. I've had several meetings with the brass at ESPN, and I was like, you know that billion-dollar building you're building over there? Okay,
yeah.
These shows
yeah.
that you keep saying, the stuff you keep saying, you don't. You haven't even chose to look at all of the scientific literature. You don't even select to get somebody over here aside from somebody from Boston University. I'm just telling you, it's a huge mistake. You need to look at the entire body of evidence here, and you'll have a different story, okay? And you know what? I used to tell them all the time, okay, isn't our job here to present all the information? Shouldn't we present all of it? Well, I could talk about a bunch of deaf ears and like, well, we're not going to do that. But I know Dr. Cummings sparked something with you.
That's true, that what you said, both of you. You know, because if you read the media, there's one voice. Never does very rarely will somebody go out and say, okay, well, let's find somebody who has a different thought on this. And they'll make an excuse, well, we can't find anybody. Well, that's not true, because the overwhelming majority of neurotrauma experts hold the same opinion that I hold. I mean,
exactly right.
I didn't do any of the research in this book. I'm just showing you this huge body of evidence that exists in science that's saying the exact opposite thing. And was it the Aspen Institute paper that
right.
we did a podcast on coming up that, you know, basically saying kids should be playing flag football. You know, the entire composition of their board that they used to hold the symposium were all anti-football people. And I wrote an op-ed with 25 other head trauma specialists on this topic. They mention it. Oh, there was an op-ed written. But they never reached out to a single one of those 26 physicians and PhDs from Stanford, UCLA, University of Toronto, Vanderbilt. I mean, some huge schools. I mean, this is not; these are great minds, and to have these voices not being heard, just for laziness.
Yeah. Well,
you
know? Just.
Well, that's why I think it's awesome. I'm so glad you wrote the book, and that's why I said, like, you know, I did read all of it because it was interesting. It was really interesting to me because this is an ongoing conversation with my kids. And I would say this. I would say, hey, the way things are going, football will be gone in 20 years. This is my boy. Mom, you're crazy. Stop it. You're crazy. And that's how he told me, hey, Merrill wrote a book. You got to go buy it, because I wasn't saying I wanted it to go away. I'm saying this concerns me because we're hearing one negative thing every single day, every single week. I mean, now we've got parents not letting their kids play. And I told people this. I said, you start taking it away from the youth sport, now you want it away from the junior high. Well, now there's no one to play at the high school. And if there's no one to play at the high school, then the colleges can't recruit anyone. And then, you know, it's becoming absurd. And there needs to be proper information. People need to be properly informed. Now, the challenge, and I've talked to you about this before, Merrill, is that now you've got 10 years of people being brainwashed. You know, being told something that's not accurate. And you know something? those same people, I mean, they have their kids skateboarding without helmets, and they have their kids sitting around playing video games all day long, and they have their kids, you know, doing other things that, and I shared this with Merrill, and this is a really important point, too. So I grew up skiing and ski racing. I wasn't a great ski racer, but I did ski race, and it was awesome. I loved it. I grew up in Waterville Valley, New Hampshire, and then I went to a boarding school. It was great, and my nephews go to ski academies. But when I was growing up, you only wore a helmet for downhill, for downhill training and downhill racing. And I know one good friend of mine died in a ski accident just training, basic giant slalom training, not downhill, nothing. And then a family friend, he died up at Waterville. He was in high school. It was horrible, just free skiing. And he just took an edge and hit a tree, okay? Now you don't even go on the hill without a helmet. You do not free ski. You don't step on the hill. I mean, if you did, people would look at you like, are you out of your mind?
Right.
And I share this with my kids, and I shared this with you. So the sport has changed, whether it's recreational skiing or ski racing, and the sport is much safer. And so things have to evolve. And I, you know, nobody said, you know, you're child abuse if you let your kids ski. Right. And I just think that they chose to attack football for whatever reason, and I think it's shameful. I think it's horrible.
Well, we've we've actually asked the media. I mean, we will go over this with them too. We'll list all the ways you could get head trauma. Okay, they exist. There's so many outside of the athletic arena. Okay, head trauma has. Okay, Bo's first concussion. He slips in the shower before BYU plays Utah in the Las Vegas Bowl like 3-4 years ago. Okay, that's when he gets.
Oh, I remember that.
Okay,
He
slips in the shower. I'm like, Bo, you're one of the greatest athletes I've ever met. You slipped in a what? It's like, okay. So football, I mean, concussions have been outside that arena. In this journey, there was a journalist who has been doing a lot of research on this. He went across the Eastern Seaboard. Now, this will really put it in perspective for you. So that parent out there that's like, oh, well, I'm not going to let them play sports or contact sports because I don't want them to get a concussion, okay? I never want them to get hurt, okay? Well, I don't think anybody wants their kids to get hurt, okay? But this will probably grab your attention. He was talking to me about the research he'd been doing on head trauma clinics throughout the Eastern Seaboard. And he asked them all one question. Let's say football didn't exist. We stopped playing it today. How much would it affect your business? So this is, they see head trauma for everything. Less than 10%. Wouldn't phase us. It's a fraction of what we see on a daily basis and a monthly basis is comes from just football. All other sports,
exactly.
Activities, you know, so what I try to get to parents or people to understand, I mean, listen, I'm not trying to change your mind, but wouldn't it be better to have all the information? So let's say an accident does happen. Let's say your son or daughter, they slip, they fall off a trampoline, they slip in a shower, they trip and fall from playing, okay? Wouldn't it be nice to know, A, he or she, they're not going to get CTE from that, having that piece, number one. But if there's symptoms, the post-concussion symptoms, which are completely separate, okay, from any other thing, they have nothing to do with CTE, since you don't know what causes it and you don't know what it causes, so you can't know what symptoms are. But wouldn't it be nice to know you have treatments and therapies, places you can go and get help and help your son or daughter get back to normalcy? Before they return to that environment, wouldn't you want to know all of that for your kids? Now, that's being a good parent. I mean, to me, if you want, and then what you do with it, that's up to you. But it's nice to have all the information, because I guess I refer to this all the time. You want to live in fear, then live in fear. I'm not going to live in fear. And that's one reason I wrote the book. I was like, man, I didn't know what to expect when I started the journey. I just started asking questions like you, Katie. I heard the same things. I watch the same things. I've been in that environment. I'm passionate about kids and youth sports. That's where it really stems from. And when I found out from my fact-finding mission, the facts, the absolute 100% scientific facts and truth, I was like, wow. First of all, people aren't going to have time to do that. And you got to share it. You got to at least give it to them. Let them have it, and then they do with it what they want.
I found your book to be an easy read, and the information was like, amazing for me because, like I said, I've been following this since it started because I was just going through a big change in my own personal life. Now I'm raising kids alone. My kids love football. Their dad coaches football. Their grandpa coaches. Everybody coaches and plays. And my son, I mean, he was an awesome baseball player, and he could have played baseball. And somebody asked him, in sophomore year, what's your favorite? And that was the year he started as varsity, and that's when you get the big crowds and lights. And he looked at me and he said, now it's football. Like, it just took that extra, because it's exciting and it's fun, and you make great friends, and you make friends and everything in baseball and everything too. But football is just a really special sport, mm-hmm. and I didn't even grow up following it. This is a true story, and I tell my kids all the time. I said, I grew up in Massachusetts. There's a whole generation of kids that don't know the New England Patriots used to be terrible. So I followed the Celtics, and I followed the Red Sox diehard and the Bruins. But, I mean, there was, like, football. I meet Coy, and I'm like, who's Tom Landry? Is he a country singer? Like, that's how dumb I was. And now the it's hilarious because the Patriots, but everybody says, well, why do you follow it so much? I said, when your kids start floating away in 8th and 9th and 10th grade, my kid's texting me from school, oh, my gosh, the Eagles just hired Chip Kelly. And it's like 1. And I'm like, why aren't you in class? But it's because I pay attention. But I pay attention to the sport. Now my kid that is normally, you know, they're ignoring you and they're telling you to take a hike. My kids are like, hey, Mom, this guy got traded. But we pay attention. So it's kind of a family thing. But in all honesty, I've worried the last 3 or 4 years. I'm like, this is not going in a good direction. But your book was so informative and factual, and the scientific evidence. I got so into it. I sent it to everyone in my family. I sent it to a few family friends in Massachusetts who really kind of gave me they didn't even open the book, and they gave me this weird, like, and I said, open the book and read it before you start making any kind of judgment. And then I've had coaches, I've sent it to my mother-in-law, I've sent it to everyone in the family, because it's really important, and I hope that this message resonates. I really do. I have nothing to gain from it except that I do love the sport, and I know my boys will coach, and I don't want to see the sport. But also, people aren't being properly informed. It's really ignorant. You know, it's sad.
That's absolutely right. You know, that it's appalling. I don't know another word I could use and put it on the air. You know, it's brainwashing, and that's exactly why we titled the book how it came up. Now, you said something a second ago, Katie, that I never even thought of. It, you know, 90% of the text messages I get from my son are a football thing. It's a great picture from a highlight, or some news about something, or it's a constant source of communication. My son spent yesterday, we're down here in Pittsburgh, we spent the day teaching my wife all about Juju's dog Bougie and what a celebrity this is. So now Bougie's become a big part of our family, and talking about the dog. And you know, my wife is a big was always a football fan, so it wasn't a hard sell for her. But she's a you know, we all spend a lot of time talking about really interesting and fun things about football. But I had one question I wanted to ask you, and it's something that's come up for me a few times talking to some NFL families, retired NFL families, and there's a few ways that this narrative goes in terms of stigmatizing people. One is the fear that it drives. If you get a concussion, you're going to, have CTE and you're going to commit suicide. And, that scares the heck out of a lot of young athletes. The other one is that, well, you're prone to violence and you're on the verge of an explosion and you're demented. And what I've heard from some families is that this, when people have found their thing after their career and they're out trying to start their business or do their thing, that this, a CTE stigma is so attached to them, with the idea that 99% of NFL football players have CTE, which is another load of garbage, that they're terrified to do business with them, that it's really affecting them economically, it's affecting the way that their businesses are running, because they're afraid they're unstable, unable to hold down work, will be unreliable, or all these really negative things that you hear established to CTE. Have you seen or have been a part of any of that kind of stigma? Because I think that's another area that some of the NFL guys are hurting, families are hurting from, that nobody's talking about.
That's a really good point, and I'm glad that you brought it up, because first of all, going back 10 years, so there was an attorney that, he was talking to me about some of our financial whatever, And he brings up this point when the CTE story broke. Oh, maybe Coy's with CTE and this and that. And so he starts attaching it. And I immediately put it to bed. And I said, no, there are other contributing issues, and that's really kind of ridiculous. And next thing you know, I see all these excuses. But what's really sad, and you're bringing up a really good point, and that is, okay, if we hire you, all of a sudden you're going to get upset or angry or this or that. And that's, I'm going to go back and circle back to the media being really ignorant, because I think it's really unfortunate, because there are so many guys doing amazing. And Merrill knows this, and I know this. And that's why I got upset when the story breaks. And I actually have said this, and I don't know Troy Aikman personally, and I don't know Steve personally, Steve Young, but I know them. I followed their careers. They have the same agent as Coy. Like, I've just, you know, they're awesome guys, you know, and I like how they do. I think Troy does a great job with games and everything. And the reason why I'm bringing that up is that the media has been drumming home this negativity, and guys are crazy and their lives are awful. And then you see guys, you know, Ray Lewis is doing great on TV. Troy Aikman's doing, and these guys have all played different positions, you know. And I just look at this, and I've been following this the last couple of years. And I have seen this happen, and I think what's really unfortunate to me, or you'll see a guy that's in transition. Maybe he's living down here in Texas. And he's kind of in transition, so I defend that guy because someone will say something ugly. And I'll say, you know what? That person, you know, they're in that transition, and it's very difficult. You have I bet they didn't save their money, or they're this, mm-hmm. or I bet they have CTE. Yep. So I've had to defend other people, not necessarily. You know, we've been fortunate as far as everybody's in coaching, everybody's in a good life, and I will tell you that good spiritually, all that's good, you know. But everybody went through a transition. I mean, I know Ty went through a transition, Coy went through, because it's the whole life change at a weird time in your life. But I have seen that, Peter, and I've probably had to defend other players, because in Texas you do get a lot of guys come down here to retire in San Antonio or Austin. So people will say things. And it makes me mad, even though I don't even know that guy, but maybe I knew when he played. I defend that guy because I'll say to those people, no, I mean, that person's doing great, and I'm defending this. And that's why I'm glad that, another reason why I'm really glad that you wrote the book and that you're getting yourself out there, because people have, it's been 10 years now. So I found myself bringing this up with people, and they're snapping at me. But I stand my ground. I stand my ground because my boys play. And like I said, Coy's doing great. And, you know, he had some really bad concussions. You know, at Colorado, he was knocked out. And I mean, he had a couple of dingers in the NFL. But the point I'm making is anything, any transgressions that happened, those were part of something else. They had nothing to do with a concussion or this CTE. And so I'm just disappointed in the media how they're just really floating all this ignorance out there, because it is affecting other guys where they are in their lives.
Well, Katie, I think you've done I'm speechless. Having a mom and a wife's perspective, your eyes and your experiences, I just tell you, they'll be significant. They make a difference. And all the things we have talked about, what's unfortunate with all of this is it's provided people with excuses. There's no more accountability for anything, you know. And honestly, that was one of the big purposes of this book. There's solutions in life, and there's people either have, well, you're two kinds of people. There are people who are, just made of excuses, going to blame, point. No, not me. It's that. It's there. It's this. It's not that. It's not me. And then there's people who want to find solutions, make a difference, make a change, make it better, make it safer. Which leads me to wrapping it up, and we'll let you go. Is when you talked about this, Dr. Cummings has mentioned it because he's a youth football coach. I coach football. I've been coaching youth football since 1991. I just launched a new pro league with Mike Sherman here last year. When we talk about the game being safer and better, it isn't to mask, okay, it's, you know, the dangers that exist over here scientifically, okay? The science that they talk about, there's no scientific evidence of it. CTE is a pattern, and they don't know what it is. They don't know what causes it. They don't know what it causes. This game is safer and better than it has ever been in the nearly 100 years we have been playing it. And I ask parents all the time, okay, if I gave you this 100-year span to pick when your kids get to play football or contact sports, or you get to, if you didn't pick this era, you are grotesquely uninformed. With equipment, protocols, instruction, treatments, therapies. It is the safest environment we have had in the history. You just got done talking about skiing when you skied as a kid versus what exists today. I mean, think about 1987, we did a helmet, or 89, a helmet safety campaign. Our goal was, in Pittsburgh, Penguins, Pirates, and Steelers, to get parents to just put a helmet on their kids when they rode a bike. Okay, now, some people might go, what? There was a time if you put a helmet on, that was not cool. If I put a helmet on, yeah. I am never going to ride a bike with a helmet. So it's just one example of how we have evolved, and these things are better, safer than they've ever been. And I'm going to go back to it lastly, and I'm going to give you the last word here, is there's no scientific evidence that a concussion will ever cause CTE in your child's life or later on as an adult. A subconcussion, okay, isn't even scientific yet, so I'm not even going to waste my time on it. That is science fiction until they do the proper steps of that. So listen, I don't know if you have anything that you'd like to share that maybe to wrap it up within that foundation there. I would love you to finish this podcast out with your thoughts.
Well, I just wanted to add, and like I said, just to go back to your book, I was really happy with the information, and that's why I've been sharing it with people, because I was nervous about the future of football. Now I'm optimistic, and I feel like your book provides scientific evidence that more people need to hear about, whether it's through podcasts, it's on the news, and that's what I'm disappointed is with. I mean, the New York Times will be quick to write about this child abuse article, but then they don't want to share the article that, oh, by the way, there is not a scientific link between these two things, and we're going to show you why. That's what I want to see these big media outlets share. And the other thing that, you know, I do feel like, and my mother-in-law has talked about this, and my kids have talked about this, is there's this war on football. You know what's sad? Is football's the one sport where it brings together all socioeconomic groups. And my son played travel baseball, thousands of dollars a month. I mean, I put that money in. I have no worries about it. I could do it, but not everybody can do it. Soccer. My daughter plays club soccer. She's got a soccer scholarship. I put the money in. It rewarded, but it's very, not everybody can afford that. Basketball. It's not the old days where you play at the court and then the kid makes it to the NBA. You have to be in these AAU leagues that are extremely expensive. What I think is awesome is you can have Deshaun Watson play against Tom Brady, two totally different socioeconomic groups, totally different, and be successful and have a great life. And I love that. And you know what's sad is that they're trying to kill the one sport that, I mean, it's good for young boys. I mean, you know, if they want to introduce girls, that's their choice. But, I mean, I know for my sons, it's been a really great experience. And we're smart as parents. We know that, hey, you have a concussion, you have to go through a recovery process. I mean, I feel like people need to be more, you know, well-read and more informed on that aspect of it, that the concussion doesn't mean you're going to have CTE. So I just wanted to add that that's what's been troubling me the last couple of years, is that I think it's been a great experience for my kids. And the NFL it gets a lot of bad information out there about the NFL, and I feel like I'm defending the NFL a lot. But you know what? It is a special thing in your life to get to play, and you make some great friends. Somebody asked me recently, you know, because, you know, I'm a single parent now, whatever, and they said, oh, do you regret anything? I said, regret? Are you joking? I said, I made some lifelong friends. I said, you're going to Super Bowls. You're going to Monday night games. I mean, you're there watching, you know, Randy Moss play, and you're in the back, you know, room after the game, and everybody's there together, and nobody, it's not, you know, this player or that player. You're all teammates, and your teammates' wives. I mean, that's, like, cool. You know, you can't replace that. So no regrets. I mean, things happen in life, and my kids know that I just focus on keeping them in their sports, keeping them. It cost me a lot of money as a single parent, but I put every penny into making sure, okay, there was a big change in their life. Divorce is a big change for a child, but the one thing I never took away, and my kids will tell you this, Mom, and my oldest boy told me this, Mom, you never took away, we didn't miss a beat. Went to baseball tournaments, went to football, never missed a beat. Sometimes the things were overlapping, and I'm showing a house, and I'm running them to practice, but guess what? They're older now, and they're like, thanks, Mom, because you know what? That made my life. If I was having a bad day or I was sad about this, I got to go to football. I got to go to baseball. So So that was the other thing that's disappointing me is when these media outlets are discouraging athletics. I'm like, that changes the life of every type of child from every socioeconomic group. So I'm a big proponent of that, and I'll always stand up for that. And I think football is unique. I feel like it's the last sport where a kid from, you know, an inner city kid from a suburban kid can all play. I mean, now they have these IMG things and all that, but in general, I mean, it's across the board the one sport where you still don't have to dump a bunch of money in. And the kids, they learn a lot about life, and they, I love it. And I'm, and that's why I'm glad you're standing up for the sport, because it needs it.
Well, Katie, it couldn't have been done more perfectly. I got Dr. Cummings and all of us sitting here shaking our heads like, oh, you hit something. All of it is so vital. The socioeconomic portion is just pivotal. And then when you talked about all the other sports, people have to remember it's football's the one sport. Like, everybody can play it. You know, the big kid, the little kid, you know, the fast kid, the slow kid.
It's a job for everybody.
Basketball, there's only about 15 of them. You know, I mean, when you think about rosters and how many are on, or baseball, I mean, there's limited how many can play, and then you have to have, you know, basketball. Anyway, that's a whole, it's a beautiful way to end it. And I just want to thank you for your insight, your time. I'm hoping that this is not going to be the only podcast you'll be a part of, because I know you have so much more
information.
We'd love to have you back. So thank you for being a part of the Merrill Hodge Find a Way podcast. We appreciate your insight.
Thank you for having me. And you guys are awesome. And I hope that I hope you keep getting the message out there. Thanks again.
Thanks, Katie.
Okay. You're welcome. Have an awesome day.
Thanks, Katie. Dr. Cummings, I didn't introduce you formally at the beginning of it, but three board certified forensic professor.
I don't think you got to do that formally anymore,
yeah,
man.
I like to do it. I want you to wrap this thing up. I just can't thank Katie Detmer enough. Just the perspective of a mom. I just think that is so vital and important, and we need to have more of that, because there's a lot of moms that are confused. You know, a lot of moms that are scared. So the more we can help them. Very true. But sometimes we tend to just talk all guy stuff, and it's nice to have a mom and a wife that comes in here and shares it with it. But finish up with a few points that she hit that you wanted to wrap up.
You know, especially having a kid develop an interest in football in the middle of this mess. You know, she hit on a lot of really important points. And one of the things that I've discovered, it's cliche and it's used in some commercials, but football is family. It is family. And the football families, the closeness of football families is different than any other sport we've been involved in, soccer or basketball. You come to the game, say hello, you leave. Football families, man, it is family. And you see that everywhere at all levels, and that closeness. And in the socioeconomic stuff, I mean, football, according to some statistics, only breaks into the top five most popular sports in one income bracket, and that's the second poorest. Right? And a lot of kids can't afford to go play in a travel soccer team. And the thing that keeps getting missed, and this is not harmless, this narrative. This isn't a, oh, well, if kids don't play football, it's not the worst thing in the world. But your narrative is killing people, scaring people into suicide, right? Literally killing people. And it's destroying livelihoods and giving a stigma to people who are out there really trying to crush life. It's hurting people.
Yeah, and I just think that that's probably what was most disturbing through this journey is the human consequences are serious. And they're, you know, this isn't like I walked out on television, you know, yeah, they're playing cover two, but I said it's cover one. I mean, who really cares or knows? I mean, to your point, this narrative has driven people to suicide. It has been the final message that has just tipped them over. Todd Ewan, which we will do more podcasts on and a lot of information, but there's one guy where his blood is on BU's hands for what they have done and what the narrative they have created without any scientific evidence of. So, Katie, again, I want to thank her. Anything that you have left that you'd like
no,
to
No, I mean, I thought
on?
That was great.
Well,
that
I appreciate
really
you, Dr. Cummings, being a part of these podcasts, and thank you for listening to the Merrill Hodge Find a Way podcast.